From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and Saint Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is Flowers for Algernon by Daniel Keyes. Flowers for Algernon is Daniel Keyes' first and most successful full-length novel. First published in 1960, it tells the story of Charlie Gordon, a man in his 30s with learning difficulties. Charlie undergoes an experimental procedure that turns him into a genius. But as the story unfolds, we see this is not always beneficial and may not be permanent. Told in the first person through a series of progress reports, a sort of diary he keeps for the scientists, we follow Charlie as he grows in ability and understanding, seeing the world around him change as he himself changes. Although he develops to surpass his teachers in just a few months, he struggles emotionally and socially, lacking the experience to develop empathy and to build a rapport with those around him. His best friend is Algernon, a laboratory mouse who undergoes the same surgery to become the world's smartest mouse. And when Algernon begins to lose his superior ability, Charlie realizes the experiment could fail, leaving him worse off than before.
April 13th. Still didn't go back to work at the bakery. I told Mrs. Flynn, my landlady, to call and tell Mr. Donner I'm sick. Mrs. Flynn looks at me lately like she's scared of me. I think it's a good thing about finding out how everybody laughs at me. I thought about it a lot. It's because I'm so dumb, and I don't even know when I'm doing something dumb. People think it's funny when a dumb person can't do things the same way they can. Anyway, now I know I'm getting a little smarter every day. I know punctuation, and I can spell good. I like to look up all the hard words in the dictionary, and I remember them. And I try to write these progress reports very careful, but that's hard to do. I am reading a lot now, and Miss Kinnean says I read very fast, and I even understand a lot of the things I'm reading about, and they stay in my mind. There are times when I can close my eyes and think of a page, and it all comes back like a picture. But other things come into my head too. Sometimes I close my eyes and I see a clear picture. Like this morning, just after I woke up, I was laying in bed with my eyes open. It was like a big hole opened up in the walls of my mind, and I can just walk through. I think it's far back. A long time ago, when I first started working at Donna's bakery, I see the street where the bakery is, fuzzy at first, and then it gets patchy with some things so real they are right here now in front of me, and other things stay blurred, and I'm not sure. A little old man with a baby carriage made into a pushcart with a charcoal burner, and the smell of roasting chestnuts and snow on the ground. A young fellow, skinny with wide eyes and a scared look on his face, looking up at the store sign. What does it say? Blurred letters in a way that don't make sense. I know now that the sign says Donna's Bakery. But looking back in my memory at the sign, I can't read the words through his eyes. None of the signs make sense. I think that fellow with the scared look on his face is me.
Keyes has been described as a novelist of the mind, and most of his other works have a similar central issue to Flowers for Algernon. He studied psychology in his youth and worked as an associate editor at a pulp magazine publisher where his earliest stories appeared. He also began to teach a class in special modified English designed to help people with learning difficulties master basic literacy, and he attributes a student from this course with the inspiration for Charlie Gordon. The success of Flowers for Algernon helped his teaching career, and he eventually became a professor of English and creative writing at Ohio University. Several of his other novels, notably The Fifth Sally, use multiple personality disorder as a basis, and this interest is already apparent in Flowers for Algernon. Despite his new abilities and enhanced position in life, Charlie Gordon feels the old Charlie lurking inside his mind, waiting to take back his life, and he feels guilty, as if he's stolen it from a friend.
June 29th. Before I go back to the lab, I'm going to finish the projects I've started since I left the convention. I've phoned Lansdorf at the New Institute for Advanced Study about the possibility of utilising the pair production nuclear photo effect for exploratory work in biophysics. At first he thought I was a crackpot, but after I pointed out the flaws in his article in the New Institute Journal, he kept me on the phone for nearly an hour. He wants me to come to the Institute to discuss my ideas with his group. I might take him up on it after I've finished my work at the lab, if there is time. That's the problem, of course. I don't know how much time I have. A month? A year? The rest of my life? That depends on what I find out about the psychophysical side effects of the experiment. June 30th. I've stopped wandering the streets now that I have Faye. I've given her a key to my place. She kids me about my locking the door, and I kid her about the mess her place is in. She's warned me not to try to change her. Her husband divorced her 5 years ago because she couldn't be bothered about picking things up and taking care of her home. That's the way she is about most things that seem unimportant to her. She just can't or won't bother. The other day I discovered a stack of parking tickets in a corner behind a chair. There must have been 40 or 50 of them. When she came in with the beer, I asked her why she was collecting them. "Oh," she laughed. "As soon as my ex-husband sends me my goddamn cheque, I've got to pay some of them." You've no idea how bad I feel about those tickets. I keep them behind that chair because otherwise I get an attack of guilt feelings every time I see them. But what is a girl supposed to do? Everywhere I go, they've got signs all over the place. Don't park here, don't park there. I just can't be bothered stopping to read a sign every time I want to get out of the car. So I promised I won't try to change her. She's exciting to be with, a great sense of humour, but most of all, she's a free and independent spirit. The only thing that may become wearing after a while is her craze for dancing. We've been out every night this week until 2 or 3 in the morning. I don't have that much energy left. It's not love, but she's important to me. I find myself listening for her footsteps down the hallway whenever she's been out. Charlie has stopped watching us. July 5. I dedicated my first piano concerto to Faye. She was excited by the idea of having something dedicated to her, but I don't think she really liked it. Just goes to show that you can't have everything you want in one woman. One more argument for polygamy. The important thing is that Faye is bright and good-hearted. I learned today why she ran out of money so early this month. A week before she met me, she had befriended a girl she'd met at the Stardust Ballroom. When the girl told Faye she had no family in the city, was broke and had no place to sleep, Faye invited her to move in. 2 days later, the girl found the $232 that Faye kept in her dresser drawer and disappeared with the money. Faye hadn't reported it to the police, and as it turned out, she didn't even know the girl's last name. What good would it do to notify the police, she wanted to know. I mean, this poor bitch must have needed the money pretty badly to do it. I'm not going to ruin her life over a few hundred bucks. I'm not rich or anything, but I'm not going after her skin, if you know what I mean. I knew what she meant. I've never met anyone as open and trusting as Faye is. She's what I need most of all right now. I've been starved for simple, human contact.
Flowers for Algernon began life as a short story in 1959 and won the Hugo for Best Short Story the next year and a retrospective Nebula Award in 1964. The extended version of the novel fares very well, unlike some story adaptations, and it has not been out of print since its first edition. The 1968 film based on the book, called Charlie, won Cliff Robertson an Oscar for his role as Charlie Gordon, and there was even a musical stage version in the 1970s starring Michael Crawford. The story has tremendous appeal, not least as Charlie sees himself as another laboratory animal, a human Algernon, and refuses to lose sight of the fact he is not just the creation of the scientists, but was a real, valid person before they made him into a genius. In a world that still struggles to recognise and support people with both learning difficulties and mental health issues, this is a powerful and important message. Above all, however, this is a warm, clever and original novel, one of the classics of 20th century fiction, and I would recommend you give it a try if you haven't already read it.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. Radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you would like to access a paid service, such as our wide range of TV channels, Sky Sports, our great range of films, or just need a little internet access, then you'll need to buy a bundle. Buying a longer stay bundle would give you the best value for money, so try to buy a bundle to suit your maximum length of stay. If you pay for a TV service with your debit or credit card and happen to leave the hospital earlier than expected, then just contact our customer care team from your bedside phone. They may be able to downgrade your bundle to a shorter duration and give you a partial refund. To find out more about bedside entertainment services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial star 800.
Excellent. Okay, it is the book of the month for May. Well, technically May, April, it's all very confusing. But Jenny Finch is with us. Hurrah! We've just heard Jenny, of course, providing the wonderful critique and overview of Daniel Keyes' Flowers for Algernon. Rob Nichols sadly couldn't make it. I think he's still celebrating a certain promotion that was taking place recently.
What was that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something to do with Association Football, the whole new fantasy world. It's classified as a masterwork. Daniel Keyes, of course, sadly passed away in 2014. Born in Brooklyn in 1927, he worked as a merchant seaman, an editor, and a university lecturer, as you said. Only two other novels published, which I suppose says something about the amount of work that university lecturers have to actually do. Just thought, even back in the day. But a Hugo Award-winning novel, a Nebula Award-winning novel, and, of course, it was originally a short story, and, of course, became an Oscar-winning film with Charlie. You were talking earlier, Jenny, about what attracted me to this particular thing, because it was one of the suggestions that I'd put forward about the text. And I felt it was very much perfect science fiction for me, insofar as it raises questions. It raised a number of issues with respect to, yes, we have the ability to do these kind of things, and clearly post Crick and Watson developing the DNA or the structure of DNA, and even Mendel and others working within that, we can actually develop this. But it's at the heart of the question that even when we looked at Mary Shelley's Frankenstein a wee while ago, we can do it. Ought we to do it? What are the consequences, though, of actually working through this side of things? The sense that, you know, everything is going to be perfect. Maybe it was. I mean, was the gamble, do you feel, from the lead character of Charlie, was it actually a worthwhile gamble to take, because he had a few moments of total clarity before again almost losing it totally?
I think what I like about the book is we get a very personal view, one person seeing what's happened to them, whereas with a lot of this sort of story we stand back and look and go, future for mankind, whatever. Interestingly, of course, if you applied this to everybody, would Charlie Gordon still have been at the bottom of the pile? Are the increases relative to what you started with, which has been the subject of a number of other stories? Mm. I think Keynes makes it worthwhile in that Charlie works on the project himself and finds the flaws within it. And without his work and his ability to do that, they couldn't have advanced the project still further. On a personal level, he pays a very high price in exchange for a very big reward. And I think that's a very human thing as his understanding of that grows. And he becomes more human at the end than he was before, I think.
That is such a key narrative trope within science fiction, what it is to be human. I was reading recently in the latest edition, in fact, of Isaac Asimov's Science Fiction Monthly, so it's always good, and it's nice to have the magazine still permeating through the cosmos and so on. Robert Silverberg was writing about how one of the things he has noticed about his own pathway through life is he's become less of a tech addict than he ever was. In fact, he refuses to have a smartphone. Absolutely flatly refuses. This from a man who was one of the first people to incorporate the startlingly amazing VCR into his world. There we are, video cassette recorder for those people. Norman Spinrad was also writing about the importance of science fiction questioning the human condition, asking where we're going, hard science fiction versus soft science fiction, or indeed steampunk and retropunk and so on within those fields. We have addressed this as being science fiction, but do you think that, I mean, certainly there aren't any aliens within this sort of area. There aren't any space invasions. Everything that we actually see outlined by Keyes in Flowers for Algernon could conceivably happen, including the academic challenges that are faced there, and the notion of people actually maybe having questionable motivations for the experiment in the first place. I mean, we saw with the scene which was very expertly described in the first place, as you say, by Charlie attending the conference, in which technically he's really there. Not as Charlie Gordon, but as an exhibit in an experiment to actually say, how wonderful, we can now do this.
Look what we've made, which is the Frankenstein thing again.
Yeah. Still, that's the question. Is it really one of those perfect sort of aspects of human science that will resonate in the same way? Now, here we are talking about it in the 21st century. It's written very much in the 20th century. Do you think it will have that power to continue to really influence people and also get people to start thinking, or at least nudge them to start thinking about human beings as being not necessarily binary digital life forms, but very much a continuum with all kinds of aspects within that rainbow?
I think that should be one of the main functions of science fiction. A lot of science fiction, particularly in the mid-20th century, was very science-based, and you had an explosion of space opera, which is fun. Space opera is great. Hurrah for Star Trek and other stuff. But This is a different type of science fiction. It's rooted very firmly in science, quite reasonable science as well. And it shows the impact not on, well, it does show the impact on a species, but it focuses on the impact on an individual. And to have the power to do that, I think, is extraordinary. And it's something Keyes handles very, very well.
John Clute in the Encyclopedia of Science Fiction, extremely moving, his line, and I think it is. I also felt that, again, written from the first person, we see the way in which people react to Charlie, people who can't quite cope with the change or can't quite cope with the changes, right across that spectrum from his work as a sweeper in the bakery through indeed his mother, and indeed that initial parental concern and the balance that we see there about, oh, he's got to have this, he can do this, and almost the sense of failure that somehow, from their perspective, the genetic quality hasn't been right. And of course that begs the question, eugenics comes into play and all the other factors within that. I mean, we clearly have that sort of situation, question now, that's very much at the heart of the moral issue of how many things do we change. Gattaca, of course, being a wonderful movie that developed that whole sort of issue even further from the point of view of how do you actually sort of select, because most parents, presumably they're looking for the best in their children. Would they go for the best? What happens if things go slightly wrong? Or in the case of Charlie, where there's an attempt to actually improve the species, and it's a short-term gain.
I think part of the problem with eugenics is it's always, let's make people cleverer. Why don't we select, if we have to have eugenics, why don't we selectively breed for kindness, thoughtfulness, the ability to share? How nice the human species would be if they weren't just trying to be smarter lab rats all the time.
Which is precisely what Norman Spinrad is talking about. His argument for that is, yes, if you just breed a whole group of species that are very kind and delicate and sheep, etc., they are natural prey for wolves who might come along. So you have those balance about what you choose. Again, I'd cite the you mentioned Star Trek, of course, but superior ambition breeds, is bred by superior ability. Superior ability breeds superior ambition. It's a different line on that.
Look where it's leading us now.
It would be remiss not to mention Stephen King as being somebody I think probably was directly influenced by Flowers for Algernon, because having read and seen The Lawnmower Man, a movie, of course, starring Pierce Brosnan, lots of similarities there. That was very much taking the virtual reality, how you could improve intelligence in using virtual technology, using a kind of inorganic form. But again, lots of similarities between what we get with The Lawnmower Man and the character there and Charlie Gordon.
Yes, and That's an interesting idea. It views intelligence, ability, as something you can bolt onto a person, whereas this looks at the internal ability within the brain. But of course the brain is soft, the brain is malleable, and the brain is ultimately fallible.
And will those flowers still be being laid on Algernon's grave?
I would hope so.
So, scores and such like, just the two of us from this point of view. I will probably go at this particular time, if you'll allow me, Jenny, to say 9.2. I think 9.2. Not quite the perfect novel. I mean, it didn't quite work. Whereas Harper Lee in our previous piece, To Kill a Mockingbird, I think everything had been nailed on that basis, and it had really worked through. If you ask me why not the other 0.8, I felt it, actually it could have been expanded a little bit more. Actually, it would have been nice to actually sort of follow through. Although, having said that, the closing sort of aspects of the whole thing and the forgetfulness and the aspects that come through with that whole system, with the final PS, please, if you get a chance, put some flowers on Algernon's grave in the backyard. And again, the spelling and the sort of line from that point of view. Maybe it is. Yeah. I'll stay. Anyway, yourself.
I would give it 8.5, partly because I first read the short story, and the short story is so good, that would be a 10. That is perfect.
And how interesting that is, because certainly science fiction is really one of those genres where the big idea and the short story is a fascinating area. One of these days, maybe for a forthcoming book of the month, we'll be able to actually look at an anthology series or a sort of collection of short stories and actually just see that, because some of those things can be extremely powerful.
Something I look forward to that.
Exactly. Meanwhile, what's happening for the next book of the month?
Right, the next book of the month, staying with a different aspect of the science fiction theme, is Childhood's End by the wonderful Arthur C. Clarke.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the book of the month.